Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
This is the Stupid Cancer Show.
That's hot.
Hello there, children!
Hey, kids!
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, May 25th. And we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, The Voice. Young adults with cancer, we are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I Am Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living, because the Stupid Cancer Show on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. We're here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all of our collective crap. Now call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible in every disrupt and challenge that is the world. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right, you heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. So welcome, my friends, to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because here to say the council is coming. Because here in Stupid Cancer Land, we're not just about quantity of your life, we're about quality too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means, is only going to come from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook and Second Life and kept Pangaea on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. We have the sheer numbers. This is Generation Cancer, our fight for the voting power and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Last week's show, Palooza, which took place on Tuesday, May 19th in Los Angeles. Last week's show had Debbie Hennessy, Brandon Schott, Michael Cannon, all who performed live Molly Malone's in Los Angeles. An amazing event. Tonight's show, Chris Keenan, Young Adult Cancer Advocate, and Pastor Care Group. Unfortunately, Chris Gambard is sick, will not be joining us tonight. We've done our own without being a little better. Amazing guy, we can touch on him a little later. And three-time returning champion, Tony Luetti, young adult survivor of breast cancer, a champion healthcare blogger, and author of the acclaimed book Breastless in the City. Yes, you heard that right, Breastless in the City. So, hello and welcome to yet another fun, fun, exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and Stupid Cancer, welcome to not only all of our first-time listeners, all of our friends from Can't Make It Green that Jack Lafar had the pleasure of attending. We look forward to having you on our listening audience tonight. So coming at you live from the chemo deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan, I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year young adult pediatric brain cancer survivor. Joining me live in the studio tonight, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Lafar. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Matthew. How are you?
I am well. Jack will be monitoring our live, concurrent, interactive chat room which apparently has been relaunched in all new fancy fashion. So if you have something to say, well, I might ignore you. He won't, but feel free to ignore Jack, as most people do, especially the ladies.
Yes, that is true, my friend.
I thought we agreed to get rid of that part.
Well, I mean, as much as it hurts, it's still the truth, right?
I guess it's the truth. Anyway, our esteemed colleague Carol Rosenthal will also not be joining us tonight. She is away on vacation. They're probably a much-needed and well-deserved vacation, but Carol will be back joining us next week on the show. So, we have here our live studio audience tonight, Brooke Ballantyne. Welcome back to the Stupid Cancer Show.
Thanks, Matt.
It's a pleasure to have you here. It's always nice to have a live audience.
Future pediatric oncologist Brooke Ballantyne.
Yes. Well said.
Well, I'll be a medical school, third year.
What are you, her agent?
I'm impressed.
Oh, okay.
Not only is she smart, but she's cute. I mean, but she's not ignoring me in the chat room.
Okay.
She's not in the chat room.
That's so. Right. If she was in the chat room, she would be ignoring you.
Probably.
Well, in any case, since we don't have Carol here tonight, we can have a little bit of a banter going on between us. I think the most important thing to talk about is that you went to Can't Make a Dream.
I did.
Which I went to in May of 2007, so I've been there, I've done that. I had an amazing experience, and I want to hear how that worked out for you.
Yeah, and speaking of your trip to Make a Dream, are you aware that you are on their postcard?
I am on their postcard.
You and Julie Larson.
Yes.
Yeah, it was in my warm fuzzy box, and I cut out Julie's face and threw out the rest.
Very nice.
No, I'm kidding, but yeah, Matt, it was amazing. It was such a great trip. The campus is beautiful.
Isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Yep.
It's, it's just endless buttes and mountains and valleys, and what a great group of people. Many of them, as you touched on, are in the chat room for the first time, and, they're really excited to be, part of the young adult cancer movement and stupid cancer movement, and, we welcome them aboard. But I got to tell you, man, Can't Make a Dream was an amazing experience for me because it's just nice to connect with other people who get it, people who have been through the same cancer crapness that you and I have been through. And, we can just freely talk about our stuff and not worry about what society thinks of us or, holding back anything. We can speak freely, and it was just great. It was great. And many thanks to Stu Kaplan and to Beth and to Shirley for putting on an amazing 5 days for us.
You guys went sapphire mining, I understand.
We did. We went sapphire mining, and we went for ice cream cones, and we had a nice lunch in Phillipsburg. And if anybody wants to know where we were, Google Missoula, Montana, Gold Creek, Montana, or Phillipsburg, Montana. Those are the three towns we were in. And,
as I recall, Phillipsburg had, the most insanely Wild West, look to it. It looked like a tumbleweed.
Yes.
Like gun shoot 'em up town.
Exactly.
And it had this old school candy store.
Yes, the old school candy store and the ice cream store are something right out of the 40s and 50s. And I tried getting some of the girls there to share a malted with me, but it was very our townish, and they all declined.
That was a literary reference, Jack.
It was.
I'm very impressed.
Yeah, Brooke told me about it.
Okay. All right.
Apparently she's read it. But yeah, it was great. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Can't Make a Dream, I invite you to go to campdream.org. They have a whole variety of retreats. And the retreat that I just attended was the Young Adult Survivor Conference. Next month they have a Young Adult Conference, which is for young adults aged 18 to 30 who are still in treatment. Anybody who is, in treatment and able to get out there, I highly suggest you attend. In July, they have a teen camp and a kids camp and a siblings camp. And then in August, they have a heads up conference for survivors aged 18 to 25 of pediatric brain tumors. So, they really are just an amazing organization. Everything's completely free. You just got to get yourself out there. And, again, for all the information on Can't Make a Dream, go to campdream.org.
Well said. Well, in any case, I had the Cancer Palooza event in Los Angeles.
Yeah, how'd that go?
That was just extraordinary. We had five musicians from the I2Y roster all performing live at Molly Malone's. Debbie Hennessy, Charlie Lussman, Brandon Schott, Denise Vasquez, and they're going to kill me. Oh, Mike Tiernan, of course. And it was just an extraordinary, as Jack points to the sign on the wall with all the names I just had to think of.
Yeah, I mean, just really, really a wonderful event. We had about 100 people came. There were drinks flying. There was cocktails.
That's awesome.
There was food. Just a really, really, really amazing experience to sit there. I mean, I keep talking about this. You know, I'm a musician and a young adult survivor, and it's been such a privilege to meet other musician survivors over the last 12 years and see how they have what I call, you know, how they choose to express themselves through the art of their survivorship.
Yeah.
And put that on. What does it do to you as an artist when you go through cancer, and what comes out the other end on the creative spectrum? And to hear these guys perform their music was just so humbling and such an incredibly energetic evening of support and solidarity for the young adult movement.
Yeah, that's awesome. And speaking of young adult survivors who are musicians, I got my hands on a copy of the new I2Y benefit CD today.
Yes, yes. This is the almost unofficial announcement, because we haven't quite got it into retail yet, that Volume 2 of the I2Y benefit CD is finally post-production and will be available for purchase and for MP3 download. Within the next month at CD Baby, we'll be doing a huge press release and a launch. 20 brand new musicians featured as part of a compilation CD, similar in theme and visual effect of the Volume 1 that we released 2.5 years ago. And this particular album, Volume 2, has like a different theme to it. And I think it speaks a very different message and purpose than the first one. Because four of the musicians on this album are deceased, they're dead, they died of cancer as young adults, but they were able to write music with, through, and during their treatments, and just some extraordinary talent, amazing, I don't know what you're pointing at.
I'm not pointing for your benefit. I'm showing Brooke how popular
okay.
in the chat room I am.
I'm paying not much attention to it. But just like without, or you just took away my
you were
emotional
talking about,
track about.
You're talking about the young adults that we've lost who are
yes.
you know, honored to be on the album.
Yeah, we are memorializing them, bereaved young adult musician survivors. It's going to be just an amazing when people listen to it all 20 tracks straight in a row. It's really an amazing musical experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so I got a sneak peek at it today, and when it is available, I'm sure that everyone will be aching to get their hands on them as they were with Volume 1.
Excellent, excellent.
But there's like, I feel like music is our month of May. We had Kevin Hurd and the Berenike Ladies at OMG. We had Cancer Palooza. The new album's coming out.
Yeah, yeah, we're really embodying what I feel is the real bread and butter of our organization, which is just that. You know, this organization, the entire young adult movement, is about creativity and the way people choose to express themselves when they deal with their crap.
Totally.
And I couldn't think of you encapsulated it very well. Again, you're being strangely articulate tonight. Are you on drugs?
I am under serious pressure to use big words.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, seeing as how we're
what does articulate mean?
Sorry. Well, I don't really have the news cue up anymore for you to play, but what I'm going to do is we're going to play a song for you here in the background while you read the news.
Okay.
Because, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, our sound cues aren't working tonight. We're having some technical difficulties, but we're making the most of it. Consider the fact that we have a brand new chat room out there making up for the difference in our lack of tech here in New York at the Chemo Deck. But, all right, so here's the news. I'm going to start playing a song here, and let's see if Jack can read the news over it. Here we go. There it is.
Okay, first up with your Super Cancer News, we have a Super Cancer Happy Hour, May 28th. Is that Thursday, Matt? Thursday.
Wake myself out of
Thursday, June 4th,
I've been sleeping in, caught inside your world in Paris. Show your heart, spend my blessings to go. May I learn
approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s is a newly released book written by our very own Stupid Cancer co-host, Carol Rosenthal. Everything Changes dusts the sugarcoating off of the young adult cancer experience. It is packed with gripping stories and an unprecedented collection of young adult cancer resources. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold. Visit the book's website at everythingchangesbook.com. Moving on to cancer care programs. The young adult groups that are active and running at Cancer Care are as follows: Living with Cancer, Inactive Treatment; Life After Cancer, Post Treatment; Young Adults, Loss of a Parent; Young Women with Breast Cancer; Young Adult Individual Grief Counseling; Young Adult Caregiver, All Diagnoses and Relationships. Contact our friend Julie Larson, who's actually on the Can't Make a Dream postcard with you, Matthew.
There we go.
At jlarson@cancercare.org. That's jlarson@cancercare.org. Or you can reach Julie by phone at 212-712-6173. Got a couple new announcements, Matthew. The first one is cancerdirectory.com. Cancerdirectory.com. Okay, folks. Tonight we're going to introduce you to a brand new resource to help you deal with your cancer crapness. It's called CancerDirectory.com. Not the sassiest of domain names, but I'm telling you, it's one you need to remember. Whether you are already a blogger or have been considering becoming one, this could be your chance to share your rage against the machine with scores of others out there dealing with the same BS that you are. So log on to CancerDirectory.com and post or repost your blog today, tomorrow, or whenever your chemo-induced hysteria settles down. Cancer Hope Network. Here's another resource you might be interested in. The Cancer Hope Network provides free and confidential one-on-one support to cancer patients and their families by matching cancer patients and or family members with trained volunteers who have themselves undergone and recovered from a similar cancer experience. Well, they're looking for new support volunteers they're looking for new support volunteers who have had any one of the following cancers: lung, liver, pancreatic, stomach, appendix, sarcoma, anal, vulvar, bladder, kidney, primary, parietal, and only Merkel cell or T-cell lymphoma. If you are interested in being trained, email info@cancerhopenetwork.com. First Descent, 2009. We have the following locations for First Descent: June 26th through July 2nd in White Lake, Wisconsin; July 5th through July 11th at Glacial National Park, Montana. Also, Glacial National Park, Montana, we have July 12th through the 18th and July 19th through the 25th. July 17th through the 23rd, White Salmon, Washington, and I will be attending that one, Matthew. I believe it's right on the Columbia River, which is the Washington-Oregon border, and I'm hoping to see some salmon out there because the only thing I know about salmon is that it tastes good on a bagel.
Okay, that's lox.
Well, I'm not Jewish. I'm Irish Catholic, so I don't know what lox is, my friend.
Lox is smoked salmon.
It is?
Yes.
Okay, well, it still tastes good on a bagel.
Okay.
Anyway, so if I see some salmon, I'm just going to try and catch one in a bagel.
Okay, good luck.
So that is July 17th through the 23rd in White Salmon, Washington; July 24th through the 30th; and July 31st through August 6th in Vail, Colorado; August 14th through the 20th in Garden Valley, Idaho; and finally, August 30th through September 4th in Jackson, Wyoming. For more information, you can go to firstdescents.org. And finally, we have two big upcoming I2I events. The first is our OMG conference in Syracuse.
6-6.
6609.
Yes, sir.
Anybody from the Syracuse area or can get to Syracuse, or if you're from New York and think that Syracuse is close to New York, it's in New York. So get your butts up to Syracuse on 6609 for our OMG conference. And June 10th here in New York City, which is technically the real New York, we have our Stupid Cancer Stupid Cancer Ungala, New York City, 09, June 10th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Taj Lounge, 48 West 21st Street. We're going to have hors d'oeuvres, cancer teeny drink specials, insane raffle items, and awesome door prizes. For more information on the Ungala, please go to ungala.i2y.com. The Ungala and all I2Y events could be found at events.i2y.com. And that, my friends, is your stupid cancer news.
All righty, Jack. I actually think we have the applause button here working. Kind of like, you know, fixing the computer with, like, a hacksaw.
Yeah.
All righty.
Or a, you know, one of those, like, electromagnetic things.
I don't know. I feel like tasering myself at this point because I can't deal with these things when they don't work. Well, we're waiting on our first guest. Christina hasn't called in yet. So, Kathy, I know you're listening in the chat room. Kathy Boyd, you're free to call in anytime you like. We could start talking to you, and if Christine decides to call in, we can switch on over to her. But, Jack, I wanted to tell you that that there was this – have you heard about this 10-year-old girl with breast cancer?
I didn't hear about that. I just heard about the 13-year-old whose parents denied him chemo.
Well, those are the two stories that have been fluttering around in the Twitter world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 13-year-old boy whose mother absconded with him because, like, he didn't want to have treatment anymore, and they were crowning, like – endangering the welfare of a minor, and then there was the 10-year-old girl with breast cancer who was actually a patient of Lenny, Dr. Sender's.
Oh, really?
Out in California. Yeah, so Lenny was talking to me about them. This 10-year-old girl had a mastectomy, a double mastectomy. How do you give a double mastectomy to a 10-year-old girl?
I don't know, but
yeah.
It breaks my heart that anyone would get cancer, but especially a 10-year-old.
No, but I mean, think about it. Like, what the hell is causing 10-year-olds to get breast cancer?
Is it the hormones in the milk?
I don't know. I mean, like, we'll get sued by the agribusiness company if we say so. You know?
Yeah.
But I'm willing to go out on a limb and say it's probably all the hormones in the milk.
Yeah.
That we just shouldn't be doing
this.
Just
speculation.
People. Yeah. Just not good. Just not good. Oh, we're seeing here in the chat room that the 10-year-old has a blog. Pull up the blog if you can send us the link in the chat room here. But yeah, I couldn't believe that. I mean, so what are your thoughts on the 13-year-old boy? Do you think, like, is it really the parents' responsibility to ensure his welfare, or are they disenfranchising him by denying him the right to have treatment where there's a 95% survival rate?
Right. See, and my knowledge on this case is very limited because I caught part of it before I went to Montana, and I caught part of it when I came back. And everything that I've seen is that, and this is my opinion, that the parents are responsible for keeping their child alive. And all the doctors are saying that all they have to do is just give him the medicine and he should be fine.
Right.
And the parents are like, well, we're just – and I don't know if it's a religious thing or whatever, but they're just not allowing him to get the chemo. And the doctors are saying, you know, your child will die if we don't give him this medicine. And if we give him the medicine, he will live and most likely be fine with that 95% cure rate.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things for me, it's a no-brainer. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I've just lived in a bubble where I think everyone values their kids more than anything and would do anything that they in their power to keep them safe. Apparently that doesn't apply to all parents.
No, apparently it doesn't. Well, I mean, in the nick of time here, we've got Kathy Buetti is joining us here.
Yay.
Brooke, can you pull me that Kathy's bio out of the printer behind you there? I forgot to grab it because she deserves to be read. It's not there.
Oh, my God.
I didn't print out Kathy's bio. All right, well, I'm going to make something.
Why don't we just let Kathy give her own bio?
All right, I'm going to make up Kathy's bio here, even though she's on the line right now. Kathy Buetti is a breast cancer survivor and was a bereaved spouse prior to meeting her current husband. She wrote an amazing book called Breastless in the City, which has been a critically acclaimed, and it's like a Carrie Bradshaw's got nothing on this woman. She's been a personal friend of mine and a friend of the show and one of the original I2Wires from 2006. Please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, Kathy Buetti. There, Kathy.
You did a great job without having that in front of you.
Okay. Well, I should do that all the time with everybody.
I was sending him sign language.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Jack's telepathy.
Oh, dude, you want to know what's on my mind.
Oh, no, I don't. So how the hell are you, Kathy?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. I'm excited that, you know, the book is out, and I'm excited for Thursday night for the book signing down in the city. So it's all good stuff going on.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
We should have a big turnout for that because everyone's really anticipating the book.
Yeah. I hope so. I'll be there.
That's
going to be awesome. Yep. So, all right. So, I mean, you're like the third time returning champion here on the radio show. But just for some of our new listeners out there, do yourself a little more justice and tell us, you know, how you got into this crazy mess.
Okay. My crazy mess started back in 1994 when I was married for just about 2 years when my husband was killed in a car accident. We were high school sweethearts, and I got married when I was 23, and 2 years later I had gone through that, which was, you know, the most difficult thing up until my life at that point that I had been through. And thinking that it was going to be the worst of it over at the age of 25, 7 years later, when I was 31, I found a lump in my breast and thought, well, there's no way this can be cancer because I already got through all the bad stuff that I was meant to go through, and I'm too young, and how can this be happening? And so I, you know, went to the doctor and heard, you're too young, don't worry, it's just a cyst, and went for a mammogram and went for a test and found out that it indeed was breast cancer. It was recommended that I have a lumpectomy, but by two doctors, and I opted to have a mastectomy just because that's what I felt comfortable with. And I had a mastectomy, and I had type of reconstruction where they took my belly fat and they took a piece of my muscle and they transplanted it and made a new boob out of it. So, and I got a free tummy tuck. So, you know, that's how I tried to look at bad things, try to look at the bright side of it. So, and during all of that, I was doing online dating prior to my diagnosis. It took a few years before I even wanted to date again after I lost my husband, but I was still hopeful. I still thought, you know, maybe I'll meet somebody, I'll still be able to, you know, get married and have a good life. And then even during cancer, I was still, you know, putting myself out there. And I had a lot of people say to me, why are you bothering? Why are you putting yourself out there while you're going through all this? And to me, it was really a way to, you know, keep feeling like I was alive. You know, the first thing I thought when I got diagnosed was, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. First, my husband died, and now I'm going to die. And so I think, you know, keeping things that felt normal to me, you know, dating, going to work, and going out with friends, it was really a way for me to keep, you know, feel like I was being hopeful and still, you know, out there living a life. And so I dealt with a lot of issues that young survivors deal with going through, you know, cancer and dating, you know, disclosure, you know, when do you tell a potential date that you have cancer, and how do you, you know, fess up to it and all of that. So when I didn't look the part and I still had my hair and my scars were hidden under my clothes, I wasn't being honest up front. And then I got to the point where I couldn't hide it anymore, and I was, you know, really, you know, telling them at the get-go. And I think that the more that I actually did hide it, the worse I was feeling about myself. I don't know if other people have felt that way, but I felt like I, you know, it was like cancer was becoming something that I felt like I had to hide, and I was feeling guilty for something that I shouldn't have had to feel guilty about. So I was really being honest up front because, you know, by then I was looking the part, so I really was not able to hide under all of that. So to fast forward a little bit to the end, well, the happy ending of the story was while I was doing online dating, towards the end of my chemo treatments, I met my husband, who will celebrate our anniversary this coming Sunday of 6 years, 8 years that I celebrate being a cancer survivor. So I was able to meet a wonderful guy that could see past the bald head and see past all the scars I had. And he had just lost his mom to breast cancer a month before we met. And so he was still willing to, you know, pursue a relationship even with the loss that he had. And so, so that's my happy ending to my story.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So the irony of all this is simply that you had to go balls to the wall honest.
Yes.
And until that point in time, you know, it took all that for you to... Oh, we're just making a mess here. Sorry about that. Oh, my God.
I was listening, Cassie.
Yeah. No, we're actually listening, but our printer ran out of paper, so we're having trouble here.
So we have the med student as our intern loading the copy.
Yeah, right, the med student. No, but so my point was that you had to really go completely whole hog honest, and it was only at that point when you stopped covering up because you felt you might have needed to that you met the man of your dreams.
Yeah, I mean, online, that first conversation that we had, I was to the point where I sat at the computer after we said our hellos. I said, I'm going through breast cancer. I have a fake boob. I have a bald head. I lost my eyelashes and eyebrows. And so do you still want to meet? Are you still interested? You know, I was just, here it is, and, you know, was really scared of the response that I would get. But, you know, like you said, when I was finally, you know, just that honest, I found a great guy.
And I've met Lou. Lou is an amazing guy. Is he there with you right now?
He actually is sleeping. He gets up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, so he doesn't make it past like 8:30 at night. So that guy's got a rough job.
And it's
not for me.
It's not.
I miss him a lot. So, yes, he is a great guy. I was very, very lucky to have found another great guy after I lost such a great guy.
So I mean, let's go back to this. Like, you're having this event on Thursday here in New York. Tell us more about that.
Well, that is, I'm going to be doing a book talk, and I'm going to read from the book and do a signing, and it's a Stupid Cancer book event. So I'm very excited to see, you know, fellow I2Wires and everybody. I'm going to be talking about, you know, my experience, and I'm going to read from one of the chapters of my book, and I'm excited to get to meet some great people. So everybody come out. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, and where is it again?
It's at the Greenwich Village Barnes & Noble, 396 6th Avenue at 8th Street.
Oh, yeah.
At 7:30.
There's a Pizzeria Uno across the street. If anyone wants to meet for dinner, we'll be there.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know that.
Okay, I'm definitely coming.
All right. Because Jack wasn't coming.
No, Jack was on the fence still about the pizza. He wasn't
right.
Sure.
Right. Exactly. So what's in store for you after this reading? I mean, I know you just got, what I like about your book was it just got sort of republished or reprinted, or you had a brand new cover on it. I really love the new cover. What's the story with the book now? Where is it? What's its trajectory?
Well, as you said, it was originally came out in October of 2006, and it was picked up by a new publisher, and it came out on May 5th. And so, you know, we're trying to, you know, get it out there. I'm waiting to hear back about another potential, you know, book event for August, but that I'll keep everybody posted on. And there's been, you know, some interest from, you know, the media in it that, you know, we're working on now. But, you know, it's really rough to get it out there. So especially, I mean, the response, you know, from especially a lot of the bookstores is, you know, about, you know, cancer books and they don't draw a big audience and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I've learned a lot about the business side of publishing during this whole process, which has been difficult, but, you know, I met some great people and I'm excited to really try to keep, you know, pushing this book out there because it has such universal themes to it of, you know, loss and love and life. And, you know, it could, you know, help a wide range of people, you know, even aside from us cancer survivors. You know, there's a lot of, I've actually gotten happily heard from people that didn't have an experience with cancer and said, you know, this helped me through, you know, what I was going through with, you know, losing. I've lost a husband or I've lost somebody important in my life and, you know, it's inspired me. And so I'm really excited to, you know, to get, you know, keep getting it out there. And I've been, you know, doing some blogging for, you know, the Stupid Cancer blog, and that's been fun, you know, with my pink nausea posts and trying to, you know, work on my own blog. My own personal blog, I do more of, it's kind of like continuing, you know, with a memoir. I write some about being a cancer survivor. I write some about some, you know, other losses that have gone on in my life. And it's kind of, you know, more personalized where, you know, I save the pink nausea stuff for the Stupid Cancer blog.
Nice.
My rants.
We love the pink nausea stuff.
We love anarchists.
So let me ask you a question. I don't think I've ever asked you this question, and pardon me if it's going to be too sensitive or not, but in between the time that your first husband died and you were diagnosed with breast cancer, were you doing any, like, just general spousal bereavement support, or did you find yourself in a position to lend support to other bereaved spouses before,
you know,
the breast cancer?
Before I had cancer and during that time, like when I lost my husband, I was only 25 years old and I did not know anybody my age, much like I found out with cancer, I didn't know anybody at my age that had gone through it. And I did meet some women who were probably about 10 or 15 years older than me that came out of the woodwork at my job. I worked in a hospital. I work in healthcare. So they had come out of the woodwork, and I met them, and they were really supportive. But I didn't really know anybody my age. And I didn't seek out bereavement support, which I probably should have, because that I was very anti, like, I don't want to go to a support group. I don't want to, you know, talk. I didn't want to talk to anybody about it. So I really was navigating it on my own, which, I mean, that was my personal choice, but I don't, you know, recommend that everybody's got to figure out what's best for them. But I didn't really. And so, I mean, there was about, you know, the first year was the worst, and then it got easier as the years went on. But I really never did connect with young bereaved spouses as much as I've connected with young survivors. And now that I see how much support I've gotten from, you know, knowing other young survivors, I think it really would have helped. I was very, very, felt very isolated back then. You know, it was difficult for my family to help me. It was difficult for my friends to understand what I was going through. So it was really tough. And I was so young, and it was, yeah, it was a really difficult time in my life. But I didn't seek that out, and it probably would have been a huge help to, you know, find out where all the other young people were that, you know, that lost a spouse. But they're, you know, it's the same as, you know, finding young people that have gone through cancer. So it was a tough time, and I didn't have that support.
Well, I mean, it's funny because numerous people have mentioned this to me and to Jack in our presence, and that the stuff that we talk about as far as young adults with cancer, in large part, can be applied to young adults with anything.
Mm-hmm.
The
right.
isolation, the lack of peer support, the
right.
financial issues, emotional mm-hmm. issues. They're not specific to necessarily what you went through. They're specific to the fact that you're in this age group, this sort of
exactly.
voided age group of black wholeness where there's nothing.
Right. I mean, I was married and we had a house, and I was left with, you know, how am I going to manage this financially? How am I going to manage this emotionally and feeling very isolated? So, yeah, so it definitely has similarities to being in that age group and the isolation that you feel and the things that you're worried about, you know, how you're going to survive and get through it as a young person. Yeah.
So let me ask you a quick question, and Jack, chime in here anytime you want, but what do you think of this 10-year-old girl with breast cancer? What do you make of it?
I heard you guys talking about that earlier, and I was floored thinking, I didn't even know what to think when I heard how young she was. And, I mean, I don't know a lot of the story. I mean, I don't know what is happening as far as her treatment and such, but, I mean, I know even a lot of breast cancers are, you know, hormone driven, and I'm thinking, my gosh, she's 10 years old, and that is like so young. My first thought was, how the hell is that even possible? I've never heard of such a thing. So, do you know what she's doing as far as her like treatment? I don't know a lot about the story, but I was floored that it has hit somebody that age. I mean,
yeah, it's blatantly incomprehensible to me, and it's certainly
yeah.
not okay. I mean, the fact that she is a patient of our chairman, Dr. Leonard Sender, I know a little bit about what's going on. I know she has
yeah.
a mastectomy. I don't know how you do that to a 10-year-old. But, oh, that's it. It's OurLittleSweetPea.com. That's her blog, OurLittleSweetPea.com. And, man, I don't know how you deal with this kind of stuff, but, you know, it just goes back to the whole, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I wrote an essay, which I released to the universe last week, called Cancer at 30,000 Feet, and it just pretty much discloses how there's no such thing as cancer prevention when you
yeah.
can get cancer at 10 years old, or
right.
when, like, you know, you're juicing kale, but you wake up in Los Angeles breathing smog, you know, or you smoke and you die at 100, or you're Lance Armstrong in your peak physical condition and get cancer at, you know, 26.
Yeah, I mean, I struggled a lot, and I still do with, when I got diagnosed, I wanted somebody to tell me, you know, the cookbook of what was going to make me okay. If I have this size tumor, I do this surgery, I do this treatment, somebody tell me how I will be okay. You know, because and there is nothing like that, but that, and I still struggle with that. You know, you mentioned like juicing kale, you mentioned, you know, I changed a lot of my nutrition and my diet, and I looked for ways that I could try. For me, it's I think the changes I made to my nutrition and diet and some of the things that I've done that have been, you know, alternative, you know, therapies and things that I've done have all, I think, been a way for me to try to control my fear, because sometimes my fear is out of control. And sometimes Lou will even say to me, he'll be like, you know what, you're obsessing so much about how often you use that juicer that that worry is, like, making you sick. You know, like the things that you, you know, the things that I think about and the things that I try to, you know, control, because it is so out of control. There's, like you said, people like Lance Armstrong, you know, he shouldn't even be alive, but he's alive. I met women at my job, you know, because the breast cancer survivors came out of the woodwork, and I met women that on paper, clinically on paper, they looked a lot better than I did, and they've since passed away. And why am I still here? You know, last year I lost my father to pancreatic cancer. It'll be a year next month. And, you know, why am I still here? Lou's sister passed away at 27 years old only 4 years ago. And why am I still here? You know, I struggle with that a lot. And like you said, it's, you know, there's like, you know, what's the rhyme or reason in this 10-year-old girl? I mean, it's just, it's like everywhere. And it's a very pretty frightening thing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, on that note, we have to go.
Okay.
I mean, we got the big Kathy Buetti book party on Thursday at Barnes & Noble's 8th Avenue and 8th Street and 6th Avenue on this Thursday. What time?
It's at 7:30.
All right. It's an I2Y event. We look forward to seeing our usual suspects there. It's like Cheers. You know, we have the same people that show up every time.
We'll have to caffeinate Lou to keep him up for it.
Right, right. Exactly.
Yes, we will. Yeah.
We'll have a nice turnout. It'll be a lot of fun, and I look forward to seeing you.
Oh, I look forward to seeing you guys, too. Thank you so much for having me back on the show.
Oh, anytime, Kathy.
Thanks,
anytime.
Kathy.
All righty.
Okay, bye.
I feel like that's a book that's supposed to be read while sipping on cancertinis.
I suppose so. Anyway, our second guest tonight, again, we're missing the sound cues here, but our second guest tonight lost her friend Lisa lost her hair to cancer when she was 21. She complained that her wigs were too fuddy-duddy, too hot, too itchy. Lisa also complained that if she just wore a hat, people stared at her. She wanted to have a hat with hair. So hip hats with hair are designed to be a comfortable alternative to full wigs, also favored by girls and younger women because they look more natural than the typical Dolly Parton-style wig. So please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show the founder of Hip Hats with Hair, Christine Heinen. Christine?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on the show.
Did I pronounce your name right? Did I butcher it?
Heinen.
All right. Was I close?
That was good. You
all
got
right.
It.
Yep.
All right.
Very good.
All right. Not too
yep.
bad. Yeah. We've had some problems here with many. I mean, your last name is fairly standard letters in it in a nice orderly fashion.
Well, it is spelled the German way, which is different. It's E-I instead of I-E.
Okay. So, like, are you related to the Heinekens? I'm kidding.
No.
Or the grocery stores out in Ohio, the Heinekens grocery stores.
So anyway, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
So tell us about your friend Lisa.
Well, Lisa is fine now, but I think it was about 95 that she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She was young, like about 21. And I remember her saying to me, "I hate my wigs. They're just so hot and itchy. I wish I had a hat with hair." And as soon as she had said that to me, it just hit me like a ton of bricks that this was going to be my mission, that I was going to bring hats with hair as an alternative to the hot, itchy wig to women with hair loss. I did a little bit of research back then. Well, 95, the internet was just getting going, so...
Sure.
Did a lot of research and found out that there really wasn't anything for young people. The only thing that you could really find are the, you know, the poofy wigs or turbans, and that was about it. There's really not much else available for somebody young and hip. So I quit my job and made it my mission to do hats with hair.
Did you approach any of the, like, head covers organizations and say, you know, I want to help you bring this new product to market, or did you just say, screw them, I'm going to do this on my own?
I said I was going to do it on my own, but I did get a lucky start. I started volunteering at Moffitt Cancer Center, just to be around cancer patients and to listen to their stories and to get an idea about how they felt and what they wanted. And while I was there, the Childhood Leukemia Foundation called and asked if they knew anybody who was making hats with hair for kids. And I, at the time, I hadn't thought about kids. I was thinking about young adults, but of course I said, me, I do that. So I started making hats with hair for kids, and they were free. They were being paid for, so they got pretty popular with every pediatric cancer center around the United States. And as soon as that got going, then that gave me a little support to be able to now bring it to women. It was a slow process, but it's out there.
So how does one go about, I mean, coming from the perspective of complete ignorance, and as a guy, you know,
okay.
we don't mind being bald
right,
when we're
right.
cancer.
Yeah.
How does one go about figuring out what type of hair, where to get hair, synthetic hair, real hair? How do you learn about that and then make the right decision for a business model?
Well, that's a good point. A lot of the information is given to women at the time of diagnosis by the doctors and the nurses right there in the clinic. Unfortunately, they have a lot of misinformation. For example, a lot of women are being told that human hair is a bad deal, and that's being told to them by nurses and healthcare practitioners, but that's really not accurate information. Human hair is supposed to be heavier and more expensive, and it is a little bit more work to take care of. So they advocate synthetic hair, but then synthetic hair looks fake. So there is a lot of misinformation being given to women right in the clinic. Another bit of information that is given to women in the clinic is that they should go shopping for a wig before they lose their hair.
Why is that?
Well, they say that you might not be well enough to go shopping after you lose your hair.
Got it.
Which is true sometimes, but it's not true all the time. The problem is when you go and you try on wigs while you have hair, you can't really feel what that wig feels like against your scalp. And then, of course, when you go through chemotherapy, your scalp is very sensitive.
Sure.
So when you put that wig on after you've lost your hair, people are shocked by how scratchy they are.
So let me ask you another sort of a pointed question. Obviously, for me, the single most important issue as a young man with cancer was my fertility. Seeing
mm-hmm.
as how, you know, from an aesthetic perspective, we don't really have to worry as men so much about our outward appearance. Would you say that fertility, maybe this is subjective or perhaps we hear from the chat room or whatever, but would you say that fertility versus physical appearance, are they interchangeably, you know, huge issues, or is one perhaps more than the other?
Well, for women, of course, the huge issue is appearance. I think that if a woman is in a relationship or whose husband is more concerned about her appearance, the harder it will be for her even to cope with hair loss. So I think appearance and fertility are tied.
Yeah,
especially for
true.
Women, we base how we look on our ability to attract men. I'm not sure if that's the question you were getting at.
Well, no, it's just like, you know, when you're dealing with cancer, there are so many different things. I mean, I can't think like a woman going through that situation, but I know so many. And at the risk of, you know, knowing that your hair might grow back and you're given X amount of progress to survive, preserving your fertility is like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get that done prior to getting your treatment. And then worrying about that pervading your survivorship and if you'll ever be able to have kids. Clearly, your friend Lisa was diagnosed at 21. You're not really thinking about having children at 21 versus getting diagnosed in your 30s like Kathy was, where
right.
it is definitely something that's on your mind more. I guess it depends on the case.
It depends on the age, too. In your 30s, you're probably more looking to have children. You may even be married at that point. but in your 20s, you're still looking around and you still want to look good. You haven't found that man yet.
Do you wind up partnering with groups like Look Good, Feel Better to complement like the makeup aesthetics with wearing the hip hats?
I do sometimes. I've gone to Look Good, Feel Better groups just to show the products and show what types of things are available.
I mean, this is probably a loaded question, but what kind of response do you get from women who find your products?
They love them. They love them. A lot of people don't know about it. Most of my business comes from word of mouth, and it's a smaller business. So a lot of people don't know about it. I wish more people did. But back to your question about appearance. I wanted to talk a little bit about how women differ in how they cope with the hair loss.
Sure.
You know, I don't hear a lot about fertility because that's not my line of business, but I hear and talk a lot about the hair loss. And I get reactions that are all over the board. Some women are indifferent and even find humor in the situation, and some women are just terrified. They're so filled with anxiety that they can barely get a sentence out. They can barely place an order. They're just bawling. And I think about that a lot and wonder about what makes the difference between a woman who can cope and kind of laugh at the situation and a woman who maybe even jeopardizes her treatment. The hair is so important. I think even Farrah Fawcett is a good example of a woman whose value as a person is so, her identity, I wouldn't say value as a person, but her identity is so closely tied to her hair that she chose a treatment so that she would not lose it. She's losing it now towards the end of her treatment, but she did choose a treatment so that she wouldn't lose it. And certainly no one can say that had she chosen another treatment, the outcome might have been different. You don't know that. You can't say that. But some women jeopardize their quality of life types of issues over the hair. One example would be I have women that call and ask for a hip hat with hair that they can wear to bed. Of course,
really?
I don't really advocate being able to wear the hair to bed, but they are so upset about the hair loss that they will wear the wig to bed and be uncomfortable, jeopardizing their sleep and their health so that their husbands don't see them bald.
Wow.
And those are the issues that I run across every day that I'm very interested in. You know, I remember another couple that came to my office to get a hip hat, and I could tell right away that this couple would have troubles dealing with the cancer treatment because the husband was so upset about her hair loss. It was very apparent that he was very concerned about her losing her hair. And he made sure that we chose the longest and the blondest hair that she could get. Even though she wanted the shorter hair and maybe not quite so bright blonde, the longer hair would be more cumbersome, it would be harder for her to wear, it would be more to take care of. He was more concerned about her appearance. And I just had a feeling that this treatment is not going to go well for her.
Well, I mean, it's clearly and it will consistently be a unique and individualized experience for every person based on their personal life's history, their personality, their diagnosis, their prognosis, and the resources that they know about that are available to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about a minute left. Everyone in the chat room wants to know what your website is, so why don't you let us know what the chat
website is. Oh, okay. It's hatswithhair.com.
Oh, hatswithhair.com.
Hatswithhair.com. Yep, just like it sounds.
And do you exhibit? Do you go to, like, breast cancer conferences or places like that?
I do.
All right, so we'll be looking out for you then.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show tonight.
Thank you very much.
And we wish you all the best. Good luck,
Thank you.
Christine Heinen.
Thanks for doing what you do.
Thanks for doing what you do. It's much needed, extremely important. All right. That brings us to our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, so that's tonight's show. Thank you very much for the vitamin injection. Hope you're taking stupid
cancer. Love.
I'd like to thank our guests. Kathy Boyd and Christine Heinecke.
Exciting and new.
Next week, thyroid cancer.
Come aboard.
With Survivor Spotlight, Lily Mulcahy, Ike DeWire from Boston.
We're expecting you.
Alicia Fox, Lucio, Continental Survivor, Continental Light of Light. Indy Light, Young Adult, Ike DeWire from Dallas.
Life's sweetest reward.
Gary Gould, Executive Director of the Thyroid
Let it flow.
Hell of a show.
It floats back to
channel.
You.
Folks, remember, if you missed any of our previous shows, just go to
www.thelifeofy.com.
The love is not stupid. It's not cancer. We'll be all back here next week. Our friends, Jack, and I wish you all go to bed, Leah. Fire out.
Hurt anymore. It's an open smile.